has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins ball near third. This game is over.
Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam, Bryce Harper.
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 560. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, the Phillies get ready to start a series in Atlanta. They're actually playing the Braves in the first game of this four-game series down in Georgia. And so far, so good here in the third inning as we're recording this. Phillies lead 3-0. We'll see how well they are able to hold on to that lead. But we will react to the series against the Dodgers in that crazy game on Sunday. And, of course, the week that was last week, kind of a lost week for the Phillies, coming off a really fun week the week before that. So, again, the Jekyll and Hyde nature of the Phillies showing itself. Dave Dombrowski talking about the team before the game here on Monday. So we're going to talk about his comments a little bit as well. We'll preview this Braves series, get into it a little bit more, and we're going to do some more Choose Your Own Adventure at the end of the podcast. A very well-received segment last week, Liz. It was a lot of fun getting to do that, so Justin and I are looking forward to jumping back in and doing that again. Of course, Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. Follow her on Twitter, at Liz Rocher. Liz, how's it going?
Not bad. I'm so glad most people enjoyed the segment last week. I had a really good time with it, and I'm glad you guys did too. So I'm excited. I've even written a last week on...
No.
Can you win the pennant?
I like
taking
it.
This very seriously, guys.
This is good. This is you know what? This is the hashtag content people absolutely need when you're watching this baseball team. Justin Clue, of course, from Baseball Prospectus, Continued Success, which he hosts with Liz Rocher, and The Dirty Inning, which he hosts with Dr. Trevor Strunk. Follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, what's up, bud?
Entering tonight with the bases loaded, the Phillies had 28 plate appearances this season and one extra base hit, which was Reese Hoskins' grand slam. And tonight, those three runs you mentioned are a product of Reese Hoskins clearing the bases with a double. So they now have two extra base hits with the bases loaded in 29.
He cleared them with Odubel? He cleared them with Odubel, or you said a double?
With a double.
A double. Okay.
Why would I?
I went for the low hanging fruit. I apologize.
I was confused for a minute as to whether or not you heard it correctly. I'm like,
no,
I don't know what to say here.
I too was confused, but that's okay. Hey, it's the beginning
joke,
of the show.
That joke killed. We're off to a great start.
I'm just letting everyone know that it happened, and the Reese Hoskins discourse goes on.
We'll continue about the Reese Hoskins discourse for sure. I did like what I saw from him during the game on Sunday afternoon. I don't know whether it was right after the double play he grounded into, but at one point during the game on Sunday, he flipped his lid,
yeah,
and grabbed their trash can and just smashed the ever living crap out of it. And I was like, finally, it looked like somebody on the team had a gosh darn pulse.
And you know why?
Yeah.
Because his first two at bats of that game, he knocked the crap out of the ball. First time he hits a screen, like a great deep line drive, and Gavin Lux, who sucks at defense, comes in and makes a great catch, and it was just like an of course moment it's just, you know, like how every time a ball goes like towards a foul ball, drifts towards the stands, if it's the Phillies it goes out of play, if it's the other team, oh, you just reach over the railing and make a nice catch. It's one of those of course that's what happened. And his second at bat, he hits one of the warning track, doesn't get it, of course, has to go back to the dugout, 0-2. Next at bat's the one where he gets hosed on a pitch almost a foot outside the strike zone, and then his next at bat is his best chance to knock in some runs, the Phillies' best chance of the day, and like, you know, he screws up and drills the ball straight into the ground, even though he's deserved two base hits already that day, and he struck out in his last at bat because he was like, well, if that was a strike, I guess I have to swing at everything now, because God only knows what a strike is. So yeah, that was a great moment for him, totally deserved, to go back and smash that trash can. And yeah, you're right, just as a fan watching, it's like, yeah, this is an embodiment of my feelings as well. It's good to see somebody as worked up as I am about how annoying this is.
Yeah, and Liz, I think it was cathartic for Reese, because he has been hitting into some awful luck. I mean, he hasn't been good at times, but I think there is also something happening at Citizens Bank Park. Like, I don't know what is going on with the humidor. I think there's just something there's like a suppression dome around Citizens Bank Park that is preventing the Phillies from being able to put together any kind of offense. I mean, they just scored another run here in the bottom of the third, so it's 4-0 now, Phillies in Atlanta. And I was looking at the home and away OPS this year. The Phillies at home have an OPS of 669, which is 20th in baseball. Their OPS away from home is 792, which is tops in all of baseball. So when you compare that to last year, they went from they were 737 OPS last year, 669 this year. So it is significantly lower. But I think the bigger difference is the home and road splits this year, because I feel like there is something going on at Citizens Bank Park where balls like the one Reese hit in his second at bat that had an expected batting average, I think, of like 820. He's done that like four or five times this year where he's failed to hit the ball out of the ballpark.
I remember when all those idiots called Citizens Bank Park a bad box.
It used to be, but it hasn't been in years.
Oh, no. I just remember that, and I'm hearing this, and it's so familiar. But what we should remember and blame, we should all blame Major League Baseball for this, because they chose to put all the baseballs in a humidor at every park without testing what would happen to them. You know, they changed the ball again this year. Didn't tell anybody about it. We all had to find out. And while they're doing badly at Citizens Bank Park, maybe it's just luck, but there could be a reason. The balls are different everywhere you go now, depending on the atmosphere outside compared to the atmosphere in the humidor. It's really difficult. Every player should be furious. Everyone should not stop talking about it, because it's messing with people's jobs, which in my mind is something that Major League Baseball wants, to try and suppress the market in some way and make everything either terrible or unpredictable. Because I've stopped thinking that it's incompetence. This is definitely intentional now. They're not just terrible at their jobs. They're terrible at their jobs in a whole different way.
That's a hell of an accusation, Liz.
I know.
They would be bad at their jobs, something we've never mentioned on the show before.
Ever.
Well, and to think that they would manipulate the baseball to try to keep numbers down the real stand-up way they handled the off-season negotiations, I just think is really in poor taste. I'm here to stand against you with that. But Reese Hoskins, by the way, Scott Lauber tweeted this out, at home hitting 195 with a 272 on base and a 329 slugging. He has two home runs in 92 plate appearances at home. On the road, he's hitting 279 with a 364 on base, a 574 slugging percentage on the road with five homers in 77 plate appearances. So 15 fewer plate appearances. He's got three more home runs. So there, I just feel like there's, and we're never going to really get to the bottom of it, but there's something going on at Citizens Bank Park that is suppressing the baseball. And it probably is the humidor combined with where they are. The baseball's different in every stadium. Every humidor, I'll bet, is probably different than the one in the next city. And it's frustrating to watch. It's frustrating to watch.
I just want to jump in real quick and the term bandbox. I was just thinking, why is that the go-to term for describing stadiums like that anymore, like small stadiums? And you guys will be delighted to learn that it was first, according to the Dixon Baseball Dictionary, it was first applied to the Baker Bowl in Philadelphia and Ebbets Field in Brooklyn. And then in modern terms, it's most applied to Fenway Park, thanks to John Updike in 1985, calling it a lyric little green bandbox. And this is what I think you guys will really like. The etymology of the term dates back to the 17th century for a cylindrical box used to carry light, fragile items such as hats. It became a common piece of baggage in the 19th century and was often disparaged in print. Of all the items in the traveling apparatus to the sex, none certainly can be a greater nuisance than the bandbox. It is the weakest, most insecure, and inconvenient baggage that ever every married man was doomed to take care of. Liz, how many bandboxes do you force your husband to carry around on a day-to-day basis?
At least 30, 3 to 40.
I know you have many hats. I know you have many fancy hats. You take
many
to hats. The ballpark.
So many, hats. So many fancy hats. So many little, you know, wrist gloves that I need to be in special bandbox cases, lots of scarves and frilly boas. I'm from the late 1800s, and my husband helps me do that.
Liz has hats. I've seen her wear hats in stores that are twice the size that she is, so she can be easily located from the aisles.
That's important. You don't want to get lost. You don't want to get lost in a Gimbel's. It's the last thing you want.
Fun fact, anyway. My husband actually enjoys putting large hats on me when we're in like mm-hmm. a in like an antique store or something and taking pictures of them. So if anyone ever gets a hold of his phone, you can see me wearing a comically large sombrero.
Life is just true to art. This is great stuff. I mean, let's talk. One thing Dave Dombrowski did not talk about today's hats. He kept it on
smooth,
the baseball.
John, you got
that's
it.
It's a good segue.
Yeah,
I am
a good one.
Killing it tonight. I really am just doing an awesome job. So we've reached the one quarter mark here of the 2022 season, and the Phillies enter the quarter pole with a 19-22 record. They are 8 games out of first place in the National League East. I think they were 3.5 games though out of the wild card. So just a jumbled mess with the wild card still at this stage of the season. You can't even really track wild card standings at this point. There's so many teams involved, but obviously the fan base has not been happy with the way the team has played. Most of the players, I think you guys talked about it on Continued Success, you can just see it in their faces. They're not happy with the way they're playing. And Dombrowski said, "We're not happy with our record. That can get better, but I think we have a good club yet. I think there's a long haul ahead of us. I think we realize that. There's a lot of good things, but we also need to play better and get more wins." Any thoughts on, Justin, any thoughts on that first bit of comments from Dombrowski?
Goodness, that was, what a fiery oration. Was he pounding the podium when he makes comments?
You know what, I may not have read it in his voice. Let me try it again. "We're not happy with our 19-22 record. That can get better, but I think we have a good club yet. I think there's a long haul ahead of us. I think we realize that. There's lots of good things, but we also need to play better and get more wins."
Whoa, see, now I'm fired up. Now I'm like, that's the Dave Dombrowski I know. That's the response. I know we're going to get into some more specific quotes. Sorry, I'm literally watching the Phillies.
Yeah, you're watching the Phillies score more runs. Yeah, that's fun. Braves outfield. What are they doing out there tonight? Whew. My goodness. The Braves outfield, by the way, folks, is just letting balls drop all over the place.
Well, just to fold into my answer here, that they have a long stretch in front of them here where I think when you were looking at the schedule before the season started that, you know, they were going to be facing the Dodgers a lot early. They were going to be facing the Mets a lot early. Now they're introducing themselves to the Braves. It's pretty early, and you're just looking around like, where are the Reds? Where are the Nationals? When do we get to play these bad teams? As I think we're going to get into, the schedule, and as Dombrowski is referring to here, that the long haul is referring to, like, you know, these Giants games and Brewers games, and like they're playing all these great teams right at the beginning. And I'm not saying they shouldn't be able to beat them, because that's the point of being a good team, is that you beat other good teams.
You beat other good teams once in a while, yeah.
But I'm a lot less alarmed, I think, coming into this series to face the Braves, even at home. And honestly, the Mets have been defanged a little as well. So, like, this is a chance for this team to capitalize. I mean, I think we were trying to apply some meaning to that Dodgers win, the last game of the Dodgers series. Like, you know, and the Phillies website was doing the same thing, saying, oh, is this the start? Is this the turnaround? Is this the comeback? And it's like, look, I don't know if we need to go that far with it yet. That's just a win. This team has a little work to do before you can start calling things a comeback. Like, it's, their main problem is a lack of consistency. So get it. But like, getting to play a team like the Braves now, which have been struggling the same way the Phillies have, I mean, this is a chance for them to capitalize and create that turnaround. So as far as Dombrowski's comments go, at least these beginning ones, these are just nothing. This is what the president of baseball ops is going to say about his scuffling, struggling team before Memorial Day. You're not going to get a real answer out of him. Now, I mean, when he had comments about Girardi, he's going to have comments about Odubel that we're going to talk about. You know, that's where you get into a little more stuff that may be a little more indicative of what he's thinking. But comments like these are just kind of like, yeah, you know, we're going to send the team out there and they're going to play and hopefully it'll be better than last night.
Yeah, Liz, to Justin and to Dave's point, we'll call him Dave. John Foley at 2008 Phils noted this little bit of information. About 40% of the Phillies games so far have been against the Dodgers and Mets. Just those two teams. 16 out of their 41 games have been against the Dodgers.
Yeah,
and so far.
I thought the whole point of Freeman leaving the NL East was that we wouldn't have to see him anymore. And I feel like I've just been waking up every day and he's been standing over my bed with a bat.
And Trey Turner. I've seen way too much of Trey Turner. Enough already with Trey
Turner. But we're done, though. Like, that's the good
news.
Yeah,
we're done. We're finished.
We don't have to see Freddie Freeman again unless they make the playoffs. Like, that's...
Right. Let's
laugh at that.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't get a whole lot easier after this Braves series, and who knows how tough this Braves series is going to be, but after the Phillies play the Braves and then the Mets again this weekend, they still have to then go play the Giants. and then they got to play the Angels, and then they got to play the Brewers. Those three teams are a combined 73-48. It does lighten up after that. The Phillies get the Nationals 11 times after the trade deadline, and this is the latest in the year they've ever played their first game against the Atlanta Braves. Actually, no, I'm sorry. I think that goes back to like 2004. This is the latest in the season they've ever played the Atlanta Braves before. But yeah, it's just, Liz, a weird quirk of the schedule, the way they have it all worked out here, that they're getting all these rough teams early. But I remember last year, when in the last 2 months of the season, we just kept talking about the Phillies' schedule and how light it was and how they really had it all mapped out in front of them to make the playoffs because their schedule was just so easy, and they just played exactly the same no matter who it was against.
We're all idiots for saying that. I think we've now hopefully learned our lesson. Oh, no, we haven't, but...
Nope.
Yeah, we haven't. We're still going to say that at the end of the season. You know, but it is an advantage to get the Dodgers out of the way now. They thankfully didn't get swept by either team this weekend, which we acknowledged could have happened, and thankfully it didn't. They could have gotten swept, but they didn't, and now they're out of the way. At least the Dodgers are. We don't have to see them again. They're no longer a boogeyman waiting in the closet. So thank God we don't have to see Freddie Freeman anymore. I hate that guy.
Yeah, I hate that guy.
He didn't sign with the Phillies, and I hate him.
Yeah. It's Trey Turner and Freddie Freeman, maybe two just awesome baseball players who I would absolutely kill to have on my team. I don't want to see them ever again. Ever again.
Who is going to replace our hate? Who's going to be the target of our hatred now on the Nationals? It's got to be someone.
Is it Soto? Soto? We just got to hate Juan Soto, right? I mean, that's
like
all. It's hard
so
to
much,
do.
Though.
I know, me too. I like Juan
you
Soto.
You like him now, but wait until
oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Punching himself in the crotch and hitting a grand slam and walk it off against the Phillies.
Like, yeah, just, I won't like that.
Just
is that
wait.
Something like that he does?
Yes, that's his move. Yes! How are you not aware of this? I talked about it the entire postseason run that they won the World Series. This is how he primes himself up. It's the most incredible thing I've ever seen.
I'm sure I've heard it before, but every time is like the first time because it seems like something you don't want to do.
Oh, it seems like something a crazy person would do.
Yes,
it's like
it does.
Fighting.
Yeah.
It's like fighting a man who's not afraid to die. You're gonna lose.
That's basically how it works. All right, let's talk about Dombrowski's Joe Girardi comments. He said he was asked about the manager and the job that Joe Girardi is doing, managing this underachieving team so far, and he said, I don't ever get into evaluating managers during the season. Basically, as I've always said to people, Joe's been fine. I talk to Joe. Ooh. I communicate with him all the time. I'll just say this. My support of a manager is that they're managing, right? If I didn't support them, they wouldn't be managing. Joe's our manager, and I'm happy to be working with him. Hey, we're all in a position that we're not happy with the way the club has played. Joe, myself, the players. We have to be better. Now, I tried not to, you know, I think that basically encapsulates the vibe well enough because I didn't hear Dave Dombrowski say those words, but I'm reading them as if I'm embodying Dave Dombrowski. And to me, Elizabeth, that sounds lukewarm.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, he's a manager and he's managing and he has this job and he's doing it. Like
you know how I support him? I haven't canned him yet.
Right. Are we supposed to understand that the second Dave Dombrowski is displeased with anything Joe Girardi's doing, he's going to fire him?
Yeah. You're quit. You're gone. Yeah, sorry. No. I said no. I said you can't start Roman Quinn a fifth straight game. I'm sorry. No.
You're fired.
Fired.
I think he is giving, you know, Girardi the benefit of the whole year, but that feels like
he
a
is.
Comment... I don't evaluate a manager to the end of the season. Like, on the whole, you don't. But you absolutely evaluate what he does every day. You absolutely think about what he does in the games. And that is not those are not the comments of a man who's happy. I mean, and it makes me wonder, why is he even bothering to give him the benefit of the whole year? But I guess that makes it easier for – maybe it makes him easier for him to be hired next season. I mean, who will want to hire him? It's not like he's, you know, he who shall not be named over in San Francisco who had a lot to – you know, who had a lot to give and probably deserved a second chance somewhere. But he's not that. Like, it really is puzzling to me that he's like, this is what we're doing because we said this is what we're doing. And because we said that this is what we're doing, we have to do it because that's the law.
For the record, in 2002, when Dave Dombrowski was with the Tigers, he fired the manager in the middle of the season, six games into the season, actually.
Six games.
Just so we're clear that he does, you know, factor in manager's performance before the end of the season. If he's saying he doesn't, then that's something he's changed about himself, but he's done it before. So something to consider.
You know, that's so early in the season. I wonder what the
they lost the all six games.
That was it?
What did I don't,
there might be there might be more backstory than that, but that's I think that was the reason for like the immediacy of okay, this is happening now.
Here, I pulled up the Associated Press story on it. Somebody had to go following the Tigers' 0-6 start. Detroit decided 2 was better, so the team fired manager Phil Garner and general manager Randy Smith on Monday. The dismissal of Garner tied the quickest firing of a manager who started the season since 1900, according to the Elias Sports Bureau. Baltimore fired Cal Ripken Sr. in 1988 after the Orioles lost 6 games en route to an 0-21 start.
I got the quote. We haven't started off well, but it's not the only thing, Dombrowski said. We've been evaluating the team. I thought if we were going to proceed to the championship level, we'd have to make some changes. There's never a good time to do this, but it was just time to make the change.
Yep. He said also, it's not only a short-term decision, it's a long-term decision. We don't have a championship-caliber club, but we haven't played well either. I mean, so he's done it before?
Whoever we hire, I would hope would be our manager for the next 10 years. I think Dombrowski's a guy who... I think he likes having the right person in the right role and then like not having to change a whole lot. I don't think he's, you know, we've painted him to be this aggressive, kick the doors in and make a bunch of trades, and that he's earned that reputation, but he's already said like, oh, like I like starting pitchers who go 7 or 8 innings, despite that not really being what baseball is anymore. And now, you know, a quote like, I would like our manager to be here for the next decade. Like, I think he likes making the right choice and having that person be around for a long time. And baseball is just a much more fluid game right now. So I'd be curious to see how those two things balance each other out.
You want to know?
I want to say one other thing.
I'm sorry. You want to know what the Tigers' record was that year?
In 2002?
2002? It's 55-106. It's not
so
like they
didn't get any better.
It's not like they were running
to that championship level.
It absolutely had to be something else because they fired the GM and the manager together, and it's not like they were a go get him team. They weren't like, I don't know. I don't think there's probably a lot expected of them this year. So that's really confusing.
Funny story, real quick. In the new movie, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness was directed by Sam Raimi. Don't worry, this is about baseball. And there's a part in the movie where two kids are like, oh, man, this is like as good as the 2003 Tigers were. Sam Raimi is from Michigan. He's a big Detroit Tigers fan. The movie is about different universes where things happen differently than they happened in this year. So that was a joke for baseball fans because the 2003 Tigers – the year after this happened, were one of the worst Major League Baseball teams of all time. They won 43 games.
They changed managers again. They changed managers again that year. Alan Trammell and Dombrowski took the GM job himself on April 8th.
So I think one of the things here, and we can move on after this, but I think one of the things that I'm reading some of the quotes here, Phil Garner said... at the day after he was fired, something along the lines of, I didn't come here to be a rebuilding manager. And I think it seems, I didn't come here to rebuild, said Garner, who refused to be critical of his previous employer. It sure sounds like Dave Dombrowski was ready to embark on a rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
And that perhaps Phil Garner and Randy Smith were not on board with that. That's me just kind of speculating on... if you read the quotes and you read and you see what the Tigers were about to embark on that season and the season after that, they went on a rebuild and then eventually became a World Series contender not long after that. But,
can I ask you guys this then? Like all this we're talking about with Dombrowski and when, how he looks at managers and when he fires people, do we feel like the quotes he had about Girardi were an indication that he is not attached to Girardi, or was this a lukewarm vote of confidence of some kind?
I think a little of both. I think John Middleton does not want to pay another person to not work. You know what I'm saying? Like they fired Matt Klentak early. They fired Andy McPhail early before their contracts were up. I don't think he wants to do that again with Joe Girardi. I think he wants to. And again, if you look at the wild card, they aren't out of it. They probably won't be out of it until August. And so Joe Girardi's at the end of his contract. If this doesn't work out, they'll know and they'll move on and they won't have to make a firing. They won't have to pay somebody to not do the job that they were paying them for. And he might also just be thinking, well, if I fire him, who do I get to do this job at this point in the season?
That's
you know,
I
do
thinking.
Do I give the job to Dusty Wathan? That's not a proven commodity. I don't know that Dusty Wathan is the guy to take a group, a $230 million payroll and turn them into winners. So he might just be thinking to himself, Joe Girardi's the horse we got. And unless he's actively, when he does sometimes actively hurt the team, but, you know, is he going to hurt the team any more than anybody else, I guess, is the point.
I hope Dombrowski had the phone in his hand to fire Joe Girardi during the game until Dusty Wathan sent Odubel Herrera from third base. And then right. He's like, you know what? We're going to see how this plays out.
Anyway. All right. Let's take our first break. I do want to read some Dombrowski quotes about Odubel Herrera and the bullpen when we get back. And we'll use that as a jumping off point for some conversation about the bullpen as well. We'll do that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. We're talking about Dave Dombrowski, some comments he made before this series against the Braves, which as we're recording right now in the top of the fourth inning, the Braves are absolutely lighting themselves on fire and running around the stadium. I don't know what it is they're doing right now, but they've made more miscues. I almost threw away a double play ball, but they're making more miscues than they look like the Phillies do on a bad defensive night, quite frankly. But the Phillies 6-0 in the fourth. But before the game, Dave Dombrowski was talking to the media, and the subject of Odubel Herrera came up. I think they were talking about accountability for some things, and that's where the Joe Girardi conversation came in. And then they were starting to talk about Odubel Herrera, noting that he's hitting just .243 right now. He has two homers on the season. He has an OPS plus of 104. He got thrown out at the plate by 8 feet on Saturday, and also in the past week swung and missed at one pitch that went between his legs and then another pitch that bounced a couple feet in front of home plate in a very, very big spot. And so Dombrowski was asked about Odubel. Why is he here? And Dombrowski said to whoever the reporter was that asked the question, I think you're tough on Odubel. Because if you look at him overall, where he is on some stuff, it's not bad. It wasn't bad last year. He was league average last year, defensively and offensively. He's had a bad few weeks offensively, but he's a streaky hitter. You're not going to have 9 stars at different positions. You have to have some complementary players. I mean, our star players are JT Realmuto, Hoskins, Segura, Didi has been out, Harper, Castellanos, and Schwarber. Those are your stars. You have to have some complementary players. Herrera is a complementary player. He's not a star. That's the end of the Odubel Herrera segment. I mean, listen, I get his overall point, right? I mean, you can't have a superstar at every position unless you're the Dodgers and you're or the Mets and you're going to spend $300 million on your team.
But we're not asking
for that.
A superstar. We're asking for a guy who doesn't swing at a pitch that goes between his legs.
Yeah,
that's like, not a superstar. That's just normal.
I think Dombrowski, in his heart of hearts, can't wait for Mickey Moniak to be ready to come back up just to give this team a different look. Because you really got to believe he was promoted to Double-A to continue his rehab. You got to believe the second he looks like he's ready to come up, he's back in center field.
We'll find out, right? Won't we? We'll absolutely find out and see if Joe Girardi will play him over Odubel and how often it will happen. Because at this point, considering the lukewarm vote of confidence, but yet a vote of confidence he gave Joe Girardi, I can only assume that if Girardi doesn't play Moniak, that's also Dombrowski's fault.
Dombrowski has to force the issue a little bit in this case, I think.
Like, I mean, we have to hope that he also wants Moniak to play a lot. Because if Girardi's not doing it, it's his job to say, hey, this kid was our first overall draft pick. Maybe give him some consideration over Odubel Herrera, who can't walk 2 feet without screwing up.
By the way, there have been seasons when Odubel Herrera was getting it way too hard from people. And those were the seasons where he was like an all-star or, you know, one of the Phillies' more frustrating but still good players, like still able to contribute in a meaningful way over like 130 at least games. This has not been – no one – no one's been overly hard on Odubel Herrera. They're just pointing at the things that he does and saying, hey, that sucks. What you do see this year is, gosh, ever since a certain time, there's been a huge groundswell of people who want to point out that your criticisms of Odubel are wrong. And I don't have any idea why that subset of people exists. All I know is that it's needless and it's super obnoxious and it's really stupid. So I don't see this as being overly critical. Certainly not in like the press that covers the Phillies, people being overly critical of Odubel Herrera. They're just saying this is what this guy does and it's not good. Like there is a reason that if he was on any team, people would be saying, why is this guy here? He gives you a reason for that at least once a week.
And I think I take these comments by Dombrowski to say Odubel is not indelibly etched into this lineup. Just saying that he's a complimentary player basically tells you he can be removed. He's not a star. He's not a stud at any one of these different positions. I think he's trying to lower the expectations that fans have on Odubel Herrera. And in that case, I think Dombrowski is kind of missing the mark here. None of us are expecting Odubel Herrera to be an all-star. We don't want him to be an all-star. We want him to stop swinging at so many pitches out of the strike zone. You could see the slump coming because he chases everything. And he's had some big hits this year. He's been better than Matt Vierling was. I think we have to give them at least that he's been better than Matt Vierling. He's been better than Roman Quinn. At this point of the season, he's been the best option. But all I'm saying is, and I think these quotes kind of lead into it, if Mickey Moniak during his rehab is hitting the ball real well and they feel he's ready to come up, Mickey Moniak has to start 5 out of every 7 days. I don't care who's pitching. Like, right. He's got to be the starter.
Like if he's here to be a baseball player, like if he's here to be the center fielder, then he's got to be out there playing center field. And right. I don't want to start right. complaining about something that's not happening yet.
Right. But we got to wait. Yeah.
You know, that should be the plan moving forward. Yeah.
All right. Last thing, the bullpen. He talked about the bullpen a little bit, and I pulled some bullpen numbers a little bit earlier. As a whole, the Phillies bullpen has the highest walk rate in the majors at 12.2%. You want to know what's going wrong with the bullpen? They can't stop walking people, and they're only middling in strikeouts at 24%, which is 14th in Major League Baseball. Phillies relievers rank 11th in baseball in Fangraphs wins above replacement. That sounds pretty good, but they are dead last in win probability added, which means they have been the least clutch bullpen in the National League. That's according to Fangraphs. And so you look at the bullpen ERA, it's 4.06. That's 23rd in baseball. They always seem to be behind in the count. I wish he had been asked specifically about Corey Knebel, because I think I'm going to do a story on Corey Knebel for the Good Fight this week. Looking at the struggles that Corey Knebel has had, among 27 pitchers with at least 4 saves this year, Knebel's strikeout per nine of 7.94 is third lowest, ahead of only Tampa's Andrew Kittredge and Arizona's Mark Melancon. Only 6 pitchers have a higher walks per nine than his 4.24. And that 7.94 strikeouts per nine is way down from, he was over 10 last year, strikeouts per nine, Corey Knebel was. So there's something going on here, and Mitch Rupert noted that it's the curveball that's hurt him this year. He's throwing it slower than he ever has, 77.8 miles an hour, and opponents are hitting 308 against the curveball. Last year, they hit 186 against it. They have a 462 slugging percentage against his curveball. It was 233 last year, 200 the year before. So they have very specifically a Corey Knebel problem. They also have a larger bullpen problem. And so Dombrowski was asked about the bullpen, and he said, our bullpen gets much maligned at times, but I do think it's actually done okay for us. The ERA is high, but a couple of those can be by having a couple bad days. The back end of the bullpen has thrown the ball well. They have to be better, but they've thrown the ball okay. We have a lot of okay things, guys, on this team right now. I mean, I think, he's being asked about all the okay things, and what he's basically telling us is it okay that we have these okay things? Not everything can be great. And while I don't dispute necessarily that idea, if you want to be a playoff team, if you want to be a great team, and I realize he doesn't want to sandbag his players. I get that he doesn't want to do that. I'm not expecting him to say Corey Knebel has sucked, but it just feels like I'm getting fed a lot of pablum here, Liz. It feels to me like I'm just reading between the lines, reading behind the thoughts, knowing that he doesn't really believe this. Am I crazy? He can't, right?
That's the problem. We don't know. We don't have any idea. Like, we have to hope he doesn't actually believe that. But some of his actions make it seem like maybe he does. Like, it's bizarre to hear him say those things. Like, it is okay for him to admit, yeah, there have been some issues this year, you know? We're hoping we're going to be able to work those out. You know, there's no harm in saying, you know, Knebel's had a little bit of trouble, and we want to get him right, and we're hoping we can do that. Instead of just straight up lying, literally just spinning lies. It's like, no, they have, they've thrown the ball well. Like, no, they haven't. On the whole, it feels like there have been sections of the bullpen that haven't, and it's a problem. And it's not a crime to say so. You're not maligning anybody by admitting what's facts and what is true, what everyone can see. It's how you say it that matters. Ugh.
John, you're doing a good job of pointing out, like, kind of just sifting through the actual, like, words and how, yeah, his Girardi comments are, like, you know, annoying, but he doesn't actually give him a locked-in vote of confidence, and that's almost encouraging. The stuff with Odubel, again, you know, he's not saying, this is our center fielder, we believe in him, we love him, we want him for the future. No, he's saying, you know, he goes into, like, a broader argument of, like, not everyone on your team can be great. What annoys me is the you guys are too hard on Odubel, or our bullpen gets maligned, but it's actually done okay. Yeah, like, just leave out the part where you're saying, like, you can, the rest of this really isn't that bad. It's that he starts off by being like, you guys are really mean. What's actually true is things are pretty much fine, if not great. And, like, you just leave off that first part, and it stops being annoying. Because that first part is where you're saying, like, you guys are scrutinizing too much. You guys gotta, hey, it's like being told to relax when you're upset. Like, no one wants to hear that. No one has ever relaxed when they've been told to relax. Never. Never in history. And so that's when he starts like that, that's what puts you on the defensive and makes you really irritated at everything else. And it colors everything else. And because really, again, it's May. It's not even quite Memorial Day. A president of baseball ops isn't going to say much more than what Dombrowski is saying. That he's even zooming in as much as he is to discuss, you know, these various topics is, you know, a lot for this time of the season. But he's not going to say anyone's on the hot seat. He's not going to say anybody's in danger, that they're weighing their options yet, because every president of baseball ops across baseball is still learning what it is exactly that they have. Now, I don't want to just use it's early in the season as an excuse for frustrating performance, but I guess that just comes back to my original point. When you're told, hey, you are wrong for being frustrated about this because it's actually fine, that's just a really irritating way to start it. So I don't mind what he's saying. I just don't like how he's framing it.
Any issues with that, Liz? I think that's on the money.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, that definitely in line with my unhinged rant from a few minutes ago.
Yeah, well, it's not unhinged. I mean,
hey, Liz.
No, it is.
Liz, relax.
Relax,
did that,
Liz.
Did that work?
Completely. Oh my god. No,
man, it's a
Zen-like
word. It really is.
I still want to shove my finger in his face and just scream at him. I really do.
Well, I think you're right. I think he is a little bit talking down to the fan base there, and I think he seems to understand that fans are frustrated, but also, like, saying, hey, stop being so frustrated.
You just got here. We've been sitting here watching this. Don't tell me to calm down.
It's like poor Alex Coffey, the new Phillies beat writer for Philly.com, who is just getting broken by this team in real time, and we're watching it all happen. And I'm having your buddy Craig Goldstein on the pod on the midweek hit and season, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Craig is just, I think this is his new favorite team. Right. I mean, I think he is immersed in, like, how weird this team is. Like, this team has a brand. Okay. And they just brandish it whenever they can.
Craig has a thread of Phillies stuff that falls into this category. And it's basically our form of Metsing. And yeah, Craig's reaction to everything like this that comes out is really validating. because he is not a Phillies person. He is a he is watching all baseball all the time, and that he is able to pick them out of the entire mess and be like, "What the hell is this?" is extremely validating because you find yourself thinking that, and you're like, "Maybe I'm just crazy. Maybe I should like branch out a bit."
We're too close. We've got too much skin in the game here, and that's why we react the way we do.
Yeah.
It is really nice to see a national writer who has no emotional ties to this baseball team look at this team and say, "What is going on?"
Yep.
I love it.
He follows a lot of Phillies people, and I feel like he's heard us. He's definitely
heard
our cry very much so. Yes.
I do feel heard. And Alex, who is new to the beat, also coming from Oakland, has not been watching this team and seems to get it. He's like, how do you people do this? You know, it's like,
we don't know.
We don't have a choice. It's just the way it is.
She's wonderful, all right, by the way. Everyone should read her work.
She's great.
Really
she's
awesome
been
stuff at the Enquirer.
Yeah. Phenomenal addition to the beats. All right. We're going to step away, take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to lose ourselves in literature. Some of the great American writers have come and gone, but I'm not so sure we've ever seen anything quite like the piece of fiction that we are going to participate with in this next segment. So it's part two of Choose Your Own Adventure, and Liz is going to bring us back into it when we come back from the break. So we'll do that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So now is the time in our podcast where we get a little more enlightened, where we sit down and we talk about some of the finer things in life. We talk about literature and fine works of reading. And Liz last week started us off on a sports choose your own adventure book for kids called Can You Win the Pennant? And we've made some choices. Justin and I, as managers of this baseball team, I forget the name of the team that we are the managers of, but
we're the Bombers, but our nickname is the Clawing Cats.
The Clawing Cats. Yep. The Bombing Clawing Cats. And we made a choice last week, and we've been sitting on the razor's edge for the last week waiting to find out how it all went. So, Liz, please pick us up where we left off.
I will. I have a last week on for anyone who decided to tune in between last week and this week.
Okay, so can go this over. Will catch everybody up.
We can catch everybody up. It is definitely not as long as the intro. Last week, in our introductory episode of Can You Win the Pennant, we met you, the manager of the Bombers, who were awful.
Hello.
Until...
How you doing?
What?
No, we're saying hello. You reintroduced
us. Same thing as last time.
Oh,
I'm saying
God.
Hello.
This
I'm the manager of the
joke.
Bombers. God.
I'm sorry. When you said hello, I thought, oh my God, have I been cut off? Is my internet dead again?
Yeah.
No, that's going to happen every
that's
week now.
It's literally
right?
The same thing as last week. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to do it every week. Yeah.
All right. Thank you for telling me. That's very helpful. All right. We met you, the manager
Hello?
Of the Bombers, who were awful until you and your inspirational speeches came along. Citation needed. We learned about all of their players, including Lou Robinson, the ancient 37-year-old outfielder turned first baseman, who was released and told to retire by Philadelphia, only to become the most important power hitter in your lineup. We learned about Jet Johnson, who stole 70 bases, and shortstop Slick Desmond, who, despite his name, is not actually a slick fielder.
Wait. Is Jet's real name Jet, and his nickname is The Jet? It's Jet the Jet?
Yes, the article The is the actual nickname, yeah.
Yes. There has been no... Jet is a weird enough name that it sounds like it's a nickname, but it could also just be the name of the person. This was written
short
in 1983.
Jethro, maybe.
Yeah. Why not Jethro the Jet? Never mind. We're overthinking it.
Just, right. You're overthinking it. You really are, yeah.
Shortstop Slick Desmond, who despite his name, is not actually a slick fielder. The media has nicknamed your team the Clawing Cats, the worst name in the history of baseball. And your fans don't shout go, go, go. They chant claw, claw, claw. Which is disturbing on multiple levels. Facing the aces with the pennant on the line, 24-year-old Jackson Barnes pitched a 1-2-3 first inning. In the bottom of the first, the Jet drew a walk. Skeets Rodriguez was at the plate next. With your speedster at third base, you had to decide whether you wanted Skeets to swing away or bunt. You decided to let Skeets swing away, which was a great decision. He fooled the aces infield into thinking he was going to bunt and slashed a single into right field. Jet went to third, but he's itching to steal home. Skeets has stolen 38 bases this year, so you're faced with your second decision. Do you want Skeets to attempt to steal second base, or do you want him to stay put? Now, last week you chose to have him stay put. Do you want to change your answer, or do you want to stick with that? I'm going to give you the opportunity to change it if you want. I have not read ahead.
So our logic last week was that it probably was the right decision in a baseball sense, but I felt like the book was trying to trick us because we had already said yes to the first thing, and then this was going to be one step too aggressive, and you were like, yeah, it's probably going to have us get caught in a rundown or something. So we were being careful, not so much because of baseball, because of book trickery. In a way, our job is harder than an actual baseball manager.
Because you also have to remember, this book was made in 1983 when stealing bases was something people did. And so I wonder, too, if the fact that the book was written in 1983, stealing second base will have been the winning option. But I think we were right, Justin, in our decision, sticking to our guns, going with our gut here by keeping him at first base.
I agree. Let's stick with it.
Alrighty.
All right. He's going to hit into a double play, isn't he?
Skeet dances off first. The Jet leads off third. Lou Robinson, old slugger Lou, steps up to the plate, chewing ferociously on a wad of bubblegum mixed with tobacco. Lou stops chomping as the pitch comes in and whacks the ball into right center field. It bounces through to the wall. Jet scores!
Yes.
That's right.
Lou chugs towards second with a double. And Skeets is tearing full speed into third base. He may be able to score. Before the game...
Send him.
Yeah, send that son of a gun. Send that little jackrabbit.
Liz, tell him to go. Liz!
Before the game...
You're delaying. He's going to get thrown out.
Oh, my God. You're taking forever. Send the runner.
Before the game, you talked to your third base coach about exactly this situation. If a runner was coming into third with a chance to score early in a close game.
Yeah, one of these rare occurrences where something like a runner coming to third with a chance to score might happen. We went over this specifically before the game.
They might get in here. We got to talk about if we score tonight. I know, it's probably not going to happen, but claw, 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 as they say.
If a runner was coming into third with a chance to score early in a close game, would you gamble and send him home? Or would you play it safe and hold him up at third base? You gave the third base coach specific orders about what to do, and he followed those orders now. What does he do?
His score is nothing, right?
Well, we just scored a run. The guy on third scored, so it's 1-0.
Okay.
So I think we send him. We got to be aggressive. We're the clawing cats here. We got to scrimp for every run we can get.
Liz, you tell him he go home, and then you claw that catcher's eyes out with your hands. Like a cat would. You do that.
All right.
Tell him I said that.
So what was the decision again? I've forgotten since Justin was talking.
He's getting... Send him.
Send him and also a physical assault at home plate.
Okay. Yeah. I don't have that option, but I'll keep it in mind.
Damn it.
All right.
These books in 1983 were very limited in their scope.
No foresight.
I gotta think a little bigger here.
Yeah.
You watch your third base coach swing his right arm in long, fast circles. That's the signal for the runner to keep on going. Skeets
like we talked about.
Yes. Skeets
did we teach him
back.
That in our meeting?
See, what you do is with a big windy motion with your arm, that will signal to the runner.
I'm starting to realize why we haven't scored a runner from third all year.
Now, if you've got your arms folded and you're shaking your head no as he approaches third base, he's probably not going to go. So you've got to make sure you are winding your arm in a counterclockwise fashion.
Mike, I got to tell you, the amount of times you've left the third base coach's box and gone to get popcorn and then brought a folding chair back with you, it's too many times.
All right. Skeets hits the bag without breaking stride and heads towards home. Man, he is moving. It seems to you that he's moving as fast as the Jet. All right, good move. No way they're going to get him. You're going to have two runs
like
on the scoreboard and old Lou on second. But wait, oh no! Skeet stumbles, starts to fall. He reaches down with a hand and gets himself steady, but he's lost a couple of steps. He gets going again, but now it's going to be close. The ball has come in from the outfield to the ace relay man, second baseman Joey Graham. Joey wheels and fires to Charlie McGuire, the catcher. Skeet slides hard, clawing for the plate. But it's a perfect throw, and Skeets is out. Let's talk about it.
We can't be blamed for that. I mean, the man fell down, okay?
That's true.
The man fell down.
That's true. I'm not going to blame myself.
No.
So, okay, you can go ahead and yank Skeets out of the game. tell him to hang up his stuff. He's done. That's over for him. He can go play rec league softball where you can fall down and it doesn't matter. But even a toddler knows how to stand on its hind legs. So you tell him that, Liz. Go ahead.
I will certainly do that after we find out what happens next. Your next two batters make outs and the inning is over. You're ahead.
Next two batters make out.
Yep. Your next two batters make outs.
Weird. Oh, make outs. Got it.
And the inning is over. You are ahead 1-0. But in the third inning, the Aces tie the score. It's still tied 1-1 in the bottom of the fourth. Then your Bombers start a rally. With one out, Slick Desmond drops a bunt down the third base line and beats it out. With Eddie Cooper at bat, Slick looks into the dugout and you give him the steal sign. Slick races off the first pitch and slides in safely. The fans go crazy, shouting, "Claw! Claw! Claw!"
No. Slick's still on my S list. Yes. I'm not a fan of his. I'm gonna choose to glower at him from the dugout. Make sure he makes eye contact with me.
Yep.
Hey! That's right. I'm glowering at you.
On the mound, Ted Panama seems rattled by the combination of a bunt, stolen base, and 60,000 fans yelling, "Claw, claw, claw."
That'll do it.
Imagine if he doesn't even know the context. He's just like, oh my God.
He begins.
How would he? They're called the Bombers. They're not a cat team.
Why would you guess the Tigers?
This doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense. On the mound. Oh, nope. Here we are. He begins to lose his control. Walks Cooper on four straight pitches. Your next batter, Bruce Marshall, hits a slow ground ball to second base and gets thrown out. But Slick goes to third and Cooper to second. You have two men in scoring position with two out. Now your pitcher, Jackson Barnes, is due up to bat. He's probably the worst hitter in the league.
Pull him.
It's only the fourth inning, and Barnes has...
No, they're going to ask about a suicide squeeze here. That's what they're going to do.
All right. He's probably the worst hitter in the league. It's only the fourth inning, and Barnes has been pitching well, so you're not sure you want to take him out for a pinch hitter. And yet, you know he can't hit. And all you need is a single, and you'll be ahead by two runs. If you pinch hit for Barnes, turn to page 20... If you keep Barnes in the game, turn to page 23. What do you want to do?
Yeah, I'm thinking you got to pull him. They say he's been pitching well. He gave away the lead immediately once we got it. Well, he let them tie the game back up immediately.
It's a single run we took on each side.
Yeah, but it's the playoffs, Liz. I mean, you know, how much leeway do we want to give a guy who apparently, you know, I forgot he was going to have to hit, and he's going to be a liability in that spot. I mean, that's pretty much taking the bat out of the hands of the guy after him and nullifying any success that the two runners have before him, because if he's got to come up and we got to work around him this whole time, then, you know, what value does the bottom of our lineup have?
If you want an example of why since 2014 I've hated the pitchers hitting in Major League Baseball, it's this stupid situation right here. People think this is fun. Ah, it's strategy. No, this sucks.
It's not strategy. It does suck.
No.
Is Slick Desmond? Cooper's on second. What's his deal? Is he fast?
Hold on.
I don't think Liz has the.
I don't
this
have
is
this
not Stratomatic. She doesn't have like little circle cards in front of her to let her know the speed rating.
Well, he's got like a bio at the beginning, right?
I don't remember talking about it. Not everybody got talked about.
Yeah, and I don't know that it's going to factor into this. I agree with Justin. I think we got to pinch hit for him. You got to take advantage of the run scoring opportunities when you get him.
All right.
We'll cobble it together with our cat-like bullpen.
Yeah, pulling a pitcher in the fourth in the playoffs is not a crazy thing to do.
All right. So we are pinch hitting. Let's turn to page 20.
Now, if we could pinch hit for him with somebody with a nickname of like Sluggo or Big Donnie Bat or something
Duke.
Like that, that would be ideal.
Yeah.
Duke would be good.
Bat, the Bat, Batson.
Say hey.
Steel, the steel, Anderson.
He sounds fast.
Doesn't he, though? You call Barnes back as he starts to walk to the plate. You pat him on the shoulder and say, Jackson, great job, but we can break this ball game open right now. I want to go for it. Your pinch hitter, Jamie Cross, settles into the batter's box. Jamie has a sweet swing, makes contact with the ball almost every time, and he has some power, too.
Well, why isn't he starting?
I don't know.
This guy sounds great.
They
what
have
are we
too
doing?
Many good players, except right now.
I guess.
The first pitch is a fastball inside, exactly what Jamie was guessing Panama would throw. Jamie gets out in front of the ball and yanks it deep into left field. A shot, a real shot. This one could get out of here. The ball rockets towards the left field stands as your fans scream their heads off. You're up in the dugout shaking your fist as the left field seat at the left field seats trying to help the ball get in for a home run. Your runners Your runners are on the move with two out, churning around the bases. A home run would be real sweet.
Oh, just go over the
my
fence
God.
Already. What is going on here?
I have to read the story, guys.
I know.
It would be disrespectful to Mitch Gelman.
I understand the process has to be completed here. I just want to know what happened.
All right. Out in left field, Choo Choo Fletcher is steaming towards the fence. He hits the warning track
like that,
with
man.
His right
it's
foot.
Choo Choo. No!
He hits the warning track with his right foot, takes another step with his left, and springs into the air. Like a jackrabbit, he goes up, climbing higher and higher.
No.
He reaches over his shoulder with his glove and over the top of the fence and snatches the ball out of the air.
Shut the hell up. Why isn't his nickname Jackrabbit?
Right now.
Oh, choo-choo. Like, you know, he jumps in the air like a train. Yeah, that makes sense. Shut up, you idiot. Who am I talking to?
I don't know. All during the playoffs, choo-choo has been killing you with his bat, and now he's killed you
with
his glove.
I'm going to kill him. I pick up a bat and I go out there and I take care of this. I take care of this.
He took a home.
What page is me killing the left fielder with a bat in front of everyone?
We'll find out soon.
Just in the knee, so his jumping and stealing home run days are over.
He took a home run right away from you. You kick the water cooler in the dugout.
I'd do more than that.
Oh yeah, that water cooler. I'm gonna put Choo Choo's name on it, and then I'm gonna commit atrocities against it.
So we've lost one run because the ground jumped up and tripped our base runner rounding third for an easy score, and now Choo Choo is out there in left field robbing home runs. This is. I got it.
I'm furious.
I got it. Now I know what we have to do.
Play conservative.
I know what we have to do. Yeah. We have to play conservative.
Jamie hit the ball hard, but no matter. You blew it. Because you wasted your pitcher. Barnes was pitching a beautiful game, and now he's gone. And you're
Oh, he's pitching a beautiful game now? Oh, yeah? Oh, get out of here.
Oh, no. The Aces go ahead 5-1.
What?
What?
Your relief pitcher gets clobbered, and the Aces go ahead 5-1 and hold that lead into the seventh inning. You're angry, frustrated. Then two of your players walk with two out in the bottom of the seventh. Slick Desmond comes up and, with the count 2-2, doesn't swing at a pitch that's slightly high. The umpire calls it a strike. Strike three! The inning is over. You're furious. Can't get a break. Lousy call. Your team is dead. Doesn't seem to have spirit. You've got to fight for your guys. A few times this year, when you've argued with the umps after lousy calls, you fired them up. Maybe that's what you should do now.
Yes.
I think from now on, we have to ask ourselves, what would Tony La Russa do? And do that thing.
I don't know. Is how much alcohol is in the dugout?
So what's our choice, Liz? Is it to go out and yell
it's
at the umpire?
Argue or not to argue? And I would emphasize that if you argue, you will get tossed from the game, most likely.
Yeah, we'll get tossed from the game, but we already threatened to murder the left fielder, so I figure the least we can do now is go out and yell at the umpire. So I think that's what
we Does the book
do.
End if we get ejected?
You can make choices that will end your game prematurely. So I'm telling you, we can start over and start from a previous save point, perhaps. But
I was going to say, what are our rules for this situation? Because honestly, I feel like getting in the ump's face right now is the right move still. This team needs something intangible to get fired up. I blacked out and we're down by 4 runs. Like that happened,
yeah, I don't know what happened
with
there.
A blink of an eye. This is demoralizing. Mm-hmm. We're every time we have a second of success, you know, it's ended by a poor call from the umpire or Choo Choo McGillicuddy jumping over a fence with the springs in his shoes. So like, I don't know. I feel like their book is saying we got to fire him up. If this is how this is going to fire him up, I say we give it a shot. And if this ends the game for us, then, I mean, we just come back to the save point. But I don't see how the book doesn't end after we get ejected. But yeah, I also don't see how staying in the dugout, minding my own business, is the right idea. I don't know.
I mean, one causes the game to continue for the manager, and one removes him from the situation. Uh-huh, uh-huh,
I'm going to say there's going to be some strange way we stay in the game if we go out and argue. So I think we go out and argue.
Okay, let's do it.
All right. So
should we find out next week whether or not we actually stay in the game?
Yeah, we should find out now.
Okay.
I think we should find out now, if only because I desperately want to find out now.
This is why these books were so popular, by the way.
Then we'll next week, we'll just, if depending on what happens, we'll start at either that decision or, you know, what happens next.
You walk off the mound telling Barnes, okay, kid, you're staying in. You're my man. And with the bases loaded, sorry, this is an old book.
We regained our composure pretty quickly there.
Sorry.
Yeah.
This is an old book, and some of the pages have stuck together. You come charging out of the dugout, and fans go berserk. They know what's coming. You take a little leap in the air, the way you always do when you're after an umpire. And you do a little skip step, sort of like the alley shuffle.
Skipping is what really puts these umpires in their place. Can I skip around him in a circle while I'm screaming at him?
Then you flap your arms, kick up a cloud of dirt, and stick your jaw in front of the umpires. You tell him that the pitch was a ball, that anyone but a blind bat knows that he's been cheating your team all game, and that he ought to be up in the grandstands with all the other pickpockets who are in the stadium. You kick some more.
All bats are blind, I feel. That's kind of redundant to point that out. How many pickpockets are in this stadium? A lot of crime
I can't tell if this was written in about 1970s baseball or 1920s. It's really confusing. Let's see. You kick some more dirt and take off your cap and stamp on it. It's a great show. The fans love it. And the umpire gets this little smile on his face and points to the dugout. You're out of here, he says. And he means it. According to the rules, you are not allowed to argue a judgment call. And any decision about whether a pitch is a ball or a strike is a judgment call. The umpire has thrown you out of the game.
Out of the game.
Maybe the Bombers can still come back and win this one. But you'll have nothing to do with it. You are gone.
Well,
is that?
I guess we start over next week. That's fun.
Yeah, is that the end?
We will. Yes, that is the end. It says the end.
Did we get points? Some of them say you got 3 out of 10 points for this ending or something. I was just curious. Anyway,
I was desperately trying to indicate that if you get thrown out, the game ends for you, the perspective character.
Right.
You are the manager.
Well, I thought maybe there were monitors in the... I thought they would at least tell us what happened in the game. Like, even if they were they were demoralized by you getting ejected and they lost.
Like, maybe we did fire the team up.
Yeah.
We don't know. Maybe we did. Maybe what we did fired the team up and they came back to win. Yeah. So I'm going to chalk that up as a win.
I'm going to say, unfortunately, we actually have no idea because the book ends and there's no facts.
In the 80s, when you were ejected, you had to go sit in your manager's office facing the corner and plug your ears.
Yes.
And you were not allowed. Yeah, not allowed to know what
All
happened.
Right. So we have a handful of save points that we could go back to. We can discuss them next week on the show. Stay tuned.
Let's do that.
For a new adventure in Can You Win the Pennant?
I love it. I love it. All right. Well, that was good fun. And we, you know, obviously, I think we made all the right decisions. I mean, I can't help it if this book is broken. So we'll just have to live with it. And we will start over at a different inflection point.
This is why people hate books.
That's right. Books are, I've always said, books are the worst. All right. Any final thoughts as we wrap up here, Justin? Episode number 560?
You know, this was the anniversary of Tommy Green's no-hitter against the Expos, which I believe Fransky LA laid out in multiple tweet forms today. So that's a fun thing to remember. But it's also the anniversary of a different Phillies Expos event, which was the debut for the Expos debut of Carl Pavano, who allowed only three hits and a walk-off win over, you guessed it, the Philadelphia Phillies. And he was traded for future Philly Pedro Martinez from the Expos. Wow. Pretty cool.
Pretty cool stuff.
Pick a starting pitcher. He probably has a historic victory over the Phillies at some point in his career.
I think that's very true. I remember that Tommy Green no hitter. Like, it's been a while since we've had a Phillies no hitter. We're about due for another Phillies no hitter, I think. Liz, any final thoughts from you?
Stay tuned next week for another episode of That's it.
We got it. All right. All right, folks, look, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Liz, for hanging out with me and talking some Phil's baseball, and they are doing some damage in Atlanta as we are recording this. The last time we recorded, they were up 7-1, and when you guys recorded before, they were up 7-1, and the Dodgers came back. The Phillies held on last time. Let's see what happens this time.
Why are you putting that out in the world?
I'm just talking to the end of the show.
Why are you putting that in nature, man?
We just let the show take its course, and this is not choose your own adventure. I don't have any control over this.
Okay, Liz, I choose
are you new?
Unplug John's mic.
Are you new? Do you not understand that almost every single Phillies fan I know believes that the things they do have an effect on the game? And you know what? They do.
Well, I did. I did cause Mickey Moniak's injury, tweeting out something about injuries. If the Phillies just stayed injury-free, they'd be in great shape. And then, like, two pitches later, Mickey Moniak got hit by a ball. So I do have that power, so I do apologize to everybody. But,
John, you're gonna look out your window tonight, and me and old Lou Robinson and Jet the Jet. We're all going to be on your front lawn smashing your gnomes and wrecking your mailbox and just ripping out your azaleas. I'm just letting you
know. Ha ha ha. Ha ha. Just that goes to show you, my grass is all dead. So there you go.
Oh, man. Did somebody already vandalize this house?
That's right. Yeah. Just get in line. Line forms to the left. All right, everybody. That's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.